We have with us today, folks, on PMP Network, Grand Ole Opry member and platinum-selling country artist John Conley. He has been releasing music with meaning since the 70s, and his most recent project, Classics 2, is no exception. The current single, Bread and Water, written by Vince Gill and Leslie Satcher, is a story of redemption that captures a moving message about the power of faith. And the man who brought us rose-colored glasses has had 8 number one hits, 29 charted singles, and is still one of the most recognizable voices in country music. He joins us right now live on PMP Network. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Good to be with you.
It's an honor to have you. So you have been recording for a long, long time. The first question I always ask folks who've been around for a while is, what do you think about all the new stuff, the internet, and all, you know, things have changed so much with recording?
Well, they have, many of them for the better. I'm thankful that we have the internet now because, you know, I'm no longer charting records as I did back in the 80s. I mean, that happens with everybody, you know. We still put out new music, but as far as it being, you know, going to the top 10 or number one or whatever, hitting the charts, that just doesn't happen with those of us who've been around over 15 minutes. But thanks to the internet, we can still reach our audience and even, you know, grow it to a great degree. When I do my live shows, I look out and there are a lot of people in the audience who weren't born when my songs came out, but they're still singing along. So
yeah,
that's in due in large part to being able to have that direct contact with people.
And you do a lot of shows. In fact, just coming up soon, as we speak right now, you're going to be in Yorktown, Texas, Houston, Texas, Dahlonega, Georgia, Tullahoma, Tennessee, Russellsville, Alabama. You're all over the place.
I am. Yeah, we still do between 60 and 70 shows a year on the road, and which is about right for us. And we're all over the country. But and when we're home, we're, of course, at the Grand Ole Opry normally, where I've been a member for 35 years. So.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the Grand Ole Opry for folks who aren't familiar with it. How do you get into it? How do you become a member, and how prestigious is it?
Oh, it's great. It's known as the Mother Church of Country Music, you know, and it's the longest running radio show, live radio show, in the world. And so it is an honor to be a part of it. It is a pinnacle, as far as I'm concerned, for my career to be a member, and you're invited to become a member. Many people guest with us. Of course, there's the impression, I think, that if you've had success in country music, you're automatically a member of the Opry, which is not true. At any given time, there are normally 60-some-odd members on the roster, actual members, but many other artists guest with us on a regular basis. So I guess that lends to the impression that everybody's a member.
Yeah, it sounds like it sometimes. There's so many people who are members, but I know it's a very rare thing to get into. Tell us a little bit about your childhood. I'm really interested in this. You were raised on a tobacco farm in Kentucky, and before you ever became a singer, I know you sang with barbershop chorus and stuff, but you actually became a licensed mortician and were also a disc jockey for a number of years, right?
Correct, yeah. I've done all kinds of stuff to make a living. We still have the farm that I was raised on in Kentucky, and we kind of, you know, nothing like what we used to do when I was growing up as far as raising a bunch of crops and all that, but we run a few cattle on it and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And hold on to the land. But out of high school, I did go start working for a local funeral home in my hometown, became so interested in it that I decided to pursue it full time, and so I did that for 6 years altogether, got my licenses, which I keep renewed. I don't let them go.
You never know, right?
Anymore, but anyway, yeah. I mean, I don't want to take that big, long test. If I were to let them expire and I wanted them back, I'd have to take a 1,000, 1,200 question test. I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
And plus, I'm very proud of having done it as a service to people. But I still had a long-standing itch for radio, which I fell in love with at about the same time I did music when I was a kid. And so I decided, you know, I'm either going to have to try to find a funeral home to own, or I better check and see if I need to switch out. So I got a job at a radio station down the road in Kentucky, and spent a total of 9 years in that, and that's what led me to Nashville. Had it not been for radio and getting a job at WLAC in Nashville, I would have never ended up in Nashville. Music would have just remained a hobby and never a career if that had happened.
And true. And actually, the song that got you on America's charts, Rose Colored Glasses, you wrote with a newsman at your radio station, right?
I did, yeah. We worked together at two or three stations, in fact. George Baber was his name. I wrote, started Rose with two verses, first two verses in the chorus. That's what I had. As far as I was concerned, I thought I was probably done with the song. I didn't. But when I played what I had of it for him, he picked up a pencil and wrote what we turned into the third verse, which gives you some hope that maybe this sour love situation could maybe turn around and go a different direction.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that became our first hit. But I didn't leave the day job. I wrote that in 76, and it didn't get released as a single until 1978, 2 years later. And I kept the job at the radio station that whole time. Having spent time in radio, I got to see a lot of people release new records that never made it, and they never had a hit. And so I didn't want to leave the day job until it looked like we had a shot at a hit record.
Yeah, I think it's amazing, though, when you look at, and a lot of this is rock and roll people, too. Once you get that one hit, sometimes it's very hard to go and get a second one. But in your case, you had two number ones in 79 with Lady Lay Down and Backside at 30. Number two hits through 81, Before My Time, Friday Night Blues, She Can't Say That Anymore, and Miss Emily's Picture. So you were flying high on the charts. What's it like to go from radio and playing songs or talking about songs or doing whatever you were doing on the radio to then being the star of radio?
Well, it was sort of a lateral move. I was used to hearing myself speak on the air, doing commercials and promos and that sort of thing, that most of which or many of which are recorded. So if you listen to your own station, you're hearing yourself from time to time doing these things.
Mm-hmm.
So I was used to hearing myself speak on the air. It wasn't much of a change to start hearing myself sing. But again, music being my hobby all that time, it was wonderful to be able to make a living at your hobby, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's amazing, actually, you know, so quickly. You had top 10 19 times you hit it through 1987. It's unusual to have that kind of streak. And again, once you have songs that are that impressive and leave an impression in people's minds, you have fans for life, and they keep growing, as you said. Do you have Facebook and Twitter yourself now?
I do. Facebook. I don't do the Twitter thing much. I do have an account, but I don't use it much. I don't really care what you had for breakfast this morning, nor do I necessarily want you to know what I had. You know, I mean, I don't see the point in that. But at any rate, I do have the Facebook thing because it's another way to interact with people and to keep people informed about what's coming up and, you know, what's going on a little bit.
Yeah. But, do you find it a great way to keep in touch with people, actually get to know them? Some of your fans actually get to speak to them through Facebook and social media?
Yeah. It is. It's sort of a one-way street. I consider it almost like a radio because you walk around, you go up and down the street and you see people walking with their phone in their face. And I'm not going to do that ever.
Mm-hmm.
I refuse. I don't have time. I don't have time to do that, nor do I desire to do it. But as far as if it can be a broadcast thing that informs people who are interested about what's going on, then that's the way I use it.
Yeah, John, I got to admit it. I have a BlackBerry, so I'm just not into this stuff with all the apps and everything. I just can't get into it.
No, exactly. Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of handy things there if you use them as tools, but it's easy for them to consume your life, and I think that's detrimental. It's in a lot of different ways, and we don't have time to go into all the different ways, probably. I ain't for it. Just ain't for it.
tell me a little bit about the derivation of Classics 1 and Classics 2, why you put those together.
Well, our plan originally was to do two classics. We've had 30-some-odd hits over all the years, and we were going to put half of them basically on the first one and the other half on the second. That was the original plan.
Mm-hmm.
But we got the first one out, and we ended up putting 20 of them on that project. And then we kept finding new music, essentially. Yeah. And I wanted to, you know, I wanted to put it out there. So we split the next one into two parts. Classics 2 has part of the hits, the later hits on it, and a lot of new music. And Classics 3 will do the same thing. And we'll have it available, hopefully, next year sometime.
And we'll have you back on when you do that, too, as a matter of fact.
Great.
Have you written any books? Have you written anything about your life at this point?
No, I never have, nor have I had the desire to. If, you know, maybe somebody else will do that, or somebody in the family or something, but I don't have the desire to write a book. I read a lot. I love books, but I'm not really into, or at this point anyway, thinking about writing one. So.
I would think that would be that's a natural, you know. I write books. And I would think that having a book about you would probably sell pretty well. You got a large fan base, and I bet you there's a lot of stories that you have inside your head that no one knows about.
Yeah, some of them I've forgotten. That's one of the things I found. I just hit 70 a few weeks back, and you know, so there's probably a lot of things that I don't even remember anymore. I'm not sure.
You know, it's interesting because I'm in my 60s, and my wife's constantly giving me crap about my memory. But I don't remember what I had for breakfast, but I remember, like, in 1967, what record company a song was on and things like that because of my radio days.
But, right, exactly.
Yeah, so but I have selective memory, I guess that you could call it that.
There you are. Me too.
Yeah. So... you're out on tour right now. Are you still writing music?
When I think of an idea, I write it down and I write a line down. But I haven't really completed anything in a long time. It's something I keep telling myself I want to get back to. But you know, I get distracted fairly easily. I do a lot of things. I live on a farm. I do all my own bus maintenance. You know, I'm jack of all trades, master of few. And so it's hard to pigeonhole a bunch of time to do it. But it was never my main stick, even though I did write the first couple of singles there. But singing has always been my main thing. And then again, our career took off, suddenly the A-team songwriters, the Harlan Howards and Sonny Throckmortons of the world, started throwing some of their best at us, pitching them to us. And it wasn't necessary for me to keep writing to a point. So, you know, I'm very proud of the body of work we've had, the quality of the songs. That's always been the main focus for me is that we do songs that have meat on their bones, something to say. And also the goal all along was to have a body of work, and we've managed to accomplish both those things.
One of the things that seems to be hot nowadays, the last maybe 5 or 10 years, is artists putting together duet albums. Have you ever thought about doing something like that?
It's come up a time or two. Brenda Lee and I years ago talked about doing a duet, but we never found just the right song that would work. But it hasn't come up an awful lot. You know, there are people that I would certainly be happy to sing with, but so far we haven't done any kind of project like that.
So I'm thinking of like a song like Bread and Water done with you and maybe Vince Gill doing it with you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that'd be great. Sure. Yeah.
But, you know, I guess these are all things that could be happening soon. 70 is the new 50. So.
Right.
Right? I mean, you think about it. I'm in my 60s, right? When I was a younger guy, 60 was old. Now 60 is the new 40, you know?
I know. I had... Well, my dad lived to be 94. So did one of my grandfathers. And that grandfather that lived to be 94 was still driving a bulldozer and clearing land for people at 92. And that's sort of my role model. I don't care about the numbers, whether you're talking age or chart positions. That doesn't matter to me. And I wouldn't back up a minute, you know. So forward only.
Yeah. So now, where can folks find you on, like, Facebook or on the web? Do you have is it johnconley.com on your website?
johnconley.com is the website, yes. And if you put in my name, Conlee is how we spell the last name, of course, then the Facebook thing should come up as well.
Well, John, it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I want to wish you a lot of luck with your number 2, the Classics 2 album.
Well, thank you very much. It has done well, continues to, and we're moving forward toward Classics 3 just in the next matter of months.
Excellent. Thanks so much. It was a pleasure
Mark,
talking to you. Bye-bye.
Same here. Bye-bye.